19. Maracy waited inside the ship, forcing herself, with effort, to remain calm. How did Waxillium do it? He and Wayne could be so relaxed, it seemed like they could take a nap in the middle of a firefight. Well, she stood her ground, or rather knelt it, and was rewarded. Through the hole in the ship's hull, she watched the wall of the warehouse where the rooms were. Eirich soon hobbled out of one, then shuffled off and called toward some guards.
"What was that he said?" Maracy asked.
"He told them to send to Mr. Soot," Milan said. "You think he really stashed that device in the same place they're keeping the spike?"
"That's the hope," Maracy said.
"Shall we?"
Maracy nodded, then prepared herself for another nerve-wracking experience. Milan led, strolling down the planks and out into the open. Maracy followed, keeping her head high, as Milan had told her. "Look like you belong," the Chondra had said. "The first rule of impersonation is to belong." She felt completely exposed, as if she were dancing naked in the middle of Ellendale's hub. They reached the bottom of the gangway, walking with excruciating slowness, and crossed the floor of the warehouse to the door. Was Maracy walking too stiffly? She couldn't check over her shoulder, Milan had warned her about that. But surely a quick glance wouldn't hurt anything. "Stay firm." Milan tried the door, and blessedly it opened. The two of them stepped through into an empty hallway, and Maracy shut the door. No shouts of alarm followed. She was positive one of the carpenters had glanced at them, but nobody had said a word.
"Nice work," Milan said. "I feel like I'm going to puke." "Must run in the family," Milan said, leading her along the hallway.
It had bare wooden walls and smelled of sawdust, and a solitary electric light hung from the ceiling. Milan stopped at the simple door at the end, listened carefully, then tried the knob. This one was locked.
"You can open it," Maracy said, "like you did before."
"Sure,"
Milan said, kneeling by the doorknob.
"No problem. I'll try something more mundane first."
She cocked her hand, and a set of picks sprouted from the skin of her forearm. She plucked them free and started working on the door.
"Handy,"
Maracy said.
"Pun intended."
"That depends,"
she said, checking over her shoulder. The hallway was still empty.
"Fool girl. How many times have you heard that joke?"
Milan smiled, focused on her lockpicking.
"I've been alive pushing 700 years now, kid. You'll have trouble finding jokes I haven't heard."
"You know, I should really interview you sometime."
Milan cocked an eyebrow in her direction.
"You Chondra have a unique perspective on society," Maracy explained. "You've seen trends, movements across large scales."
"I suppose," Milan said, twisting her lockpick. "What good does it do?"
"Statistics show that if we make subtle changes to our environment, the way we approach our legal system or employment rates, maybe even our city layout, we can positively influence the people living in that environment. Your head may hold the key to what those changes should be. You've seen society evolve, move. You've watched the shifting of peoples like the tides on a beach."
"My thigh,"
Milan said, twisting the doorknob with a click, then pushing the door open a crack. She nodded, standing up straight.
"Your what?" Maracy asked.
"You said my head might hold the key,"
Milan said, striding into the chamber beyond, a small, surprisingly well-furnished room.
"It's actually my thigh right now. A Chondra stores its cognitive system through its entire body, but my memories right now are in a solid metal compartment in my thigh. Safer that way. People aim for the head."
"So what's in your head?"
"Eyes, sensory apparatus," Milan said, "and an emergency canteen."
"You're kidding."
"Nope,"
Milan said, hands on hips, scanning the room. Another door on the left led farther into the system of rooms built along the side of the warehouse, but there were no windows out to the main chamber, which was good. Though the room smelled of new sawdust, like the rest of the building,
Here that was mixed with a scent of wood polish and a faint odor of cigar smoke. Light from a small electric desk lamp revealed a tidy study with rows of books in a bookcase, two plush chairs with a maroon and yellow pattern in front of the desk, and several decorative plants that probably had to be rotated outside each day to keep from wilting. Marcy trailed through the room, noting its oddities. Every room had them. Marks of individuality, clues to the life of the occupant. The desk drawers had wide, exaggerated handles on them. The stand lamp in the corner had been bolted to the wooden floor, as had the chairs, likely to keep them in place should Eirich stumble into them. Marcy was not familiar with the man's disease, but it appeared he liked his chambers to accommodate a little fumbling. Milan went straight for the bookcase, then began pulling books off, toppling them to the ground.
"It's always behind the books," she said. "People don't like to read. They like to be seen as someone who reads.
Milan," Marcy said, then pointed to the large safe in the corner.
"Ah,"
Milan said, mid-ransack. She knocked the last few books off the shelf, perhaps for completeness' sake, then strode to the safe.
This is going to be a little tougher. Can't crack something like this with a set of picks."
"Can you manage it?" Marcy asked.
"Patience," Milan said. "Bring over that lamp."
Marcy took it from the desk, stretching out the cord to its fullest and directing its light for Milan. Milan said, then pressed her hand against the safe, ignoring the dial. Her fingers and palm went translucent, and then her flesh began to wiggle, squeezing into the joints, leaving behind crystalline bones held together with the barest of sinew. Marcy swallowed, mouth suddenly tasting bitter. She'd known Milan could do this, but watching it was something else. She busied herself, propping the lamp on the arm of the desk chair to give Milan light, though the Chandra now knelt with eyes closed, so who knew if she needed it any longer. Marcy then started rummaging through the desk drawers to see if she could find anything important.
"Harmony send that Eirich goes back to the scientists after this," Marcy thought, "instead of returning here to catch up on paperwork." "The world back then," Milan said suddenly, "wasn't all that different from the one now."
Marcy hesitated. Milan still knelt with her eyes closed, her strange bones exposed. The flesh had gone translucent all the way up to her elbow.
"What do you mean?" Marcy asked. "People talk about that time," Milan said. "The time of the Lord Mistborn, right after the Katasandra. They speak of it in hushed tones, as if it were some time of legends."
"It was," Marcy said. "The Counselor of the Gods, Hammond, Alrian Ladrian, they forged a new world."
"Yeah, sure," Milan said. "But they also squabbled like children, and each one had their own vision of what this new world should be. Half the reason you're having troubles now is because they didn't care about settlements outside of Elendil. The originators were big city people through and through. You want trends? Want to know what I've seen? People are people. Hell, even Chandra act the same in our own way. Life then was like life now, only you have better street food."
Marcy pondered this, then turned back to the desk. She still wanted to interview some Chandra, but perhaps ones who were a little more reflective than Milan. In the desk, she found a notebook with some of Eirich's observations and sketches about the ship, written in a shaky scrawl, along with a map of the area. The more she discovered, the more certain she was that the Set hadn't built this vessel. They were studying it as much as repairing it. Marcy tucked the book into her purse. "See? Handy," she thought. After that, she rose to check the other door out of the room. She wouldn't want to have some random carpenter wander in. She cracked it open and peeked into a completely dark room, and was immediately hit with a pungent odor like that of the slums. Unwashed bodies, dirt and grime. Frowning, she opened the door wider. The shaded illumination of the lamp, which faced the wrong way to give direct light, crept hesitantly into the room. Shadows stretched long from a few bare tables and a stack of boxes, and beyond them
Were those cages? Yes. Perhaps 4 feet tall, with thick bars, the cages looked like the type you might use to contain a large animal. They were empty.
Milan?
Marcy asked, glancing at the Condra, who did not respond. She looked utterly absorbed by her task. Marcy inched into the room, wishing for another light. What did they keep in here? Guard dogs? She hadn't seen any of those at the perimeter. She stopped near one of the three large cages, bending over to see if she could determine what kind of animal had been kept in it. Something rustled in the next cage over. Marcy's breath caught. What she'd mistaken for a lump of blankets or pillows was moving. She glanced toward the desk in the other room where she'd set her rifle. The thing lurched and slammed against the bars. Marcy gasped, jumping away, her back crashing against the stack of nearby boxes. Inside the cage, dim light reflected from a too flat face of red and black, dark pits of eyes. The pictures. Marcy had forgotten the pictures that Relure had left. Horrible faces of red and black, with those deep, dark eyes. Images as if from a nightmare, drawn in frantic, scribbled strokes. The monsters were real. And there was one in the cage here, swathed in thick fur, face of polished red. It regarded her, silent, then reached out between the bars with a shockingly human hand and whispered a single word through lips that somehow didn't move.
Please.
Wayne turned down his saunter and added a fair measure of scramble to his step instead. This engineer, he didn't like being here among all these soldiers. He'd spent his life building houses and working on skyscrapers, and now here he was, basically in the middle of a bivouac. That ship was marvelous, but he had a distinct worry. It was secret, and secret projects were the kind where little men like himself disappeared when everything was finished. Now, something's wrong, Wayne thought, halfway across the floor of the warehouse. He didn't stop walking, but he turned his steps in a little circle like he was pacing. Something was wrong, but what was it? Wayne? Wax hissed from the shadows nearby, crouched beside a barrel of pitch. Wayne ignored him, continuing his loop. He was a scientist. No, an engineer. He was a working man. Learned enough, but not some fancy professor who was paid to stand all day and talk. He built things, and he hated being in this place with all its guns. He encouraged life, and the soldiers were the opposite of that. They... No, he thought again, raising his hands to the sides of his head. Wrong. Shape up, Wayne. This was your plan. You've got to make it work. What was wrong? He stopped, then reached into the pocket of his vest and took out a charcoal pencil. He held it up, inspecting it, before slipping it behind his ear. He let out a long sigh. He was an engineer, a no-nonsense man who saw that things got done. He liked it here, as they had a military way about them. They said what they wanted and were straight with him. Men were rewarded for hard work. He didn't like all those guns, and he certainly didn't like the men in charge of this place. There was something off about them. But he held his tongue. Relaxing, Wayne crossed the rest of the way to the door guard. False nose, mustache, and a little extra air in the cheeks to fatten his face, and a perpetual squint in the right eye. Came from looking at plans all the time, he figured. But he didn't need a monocle. Those things looked downright stupid. He stepped up to the guard.
The lattice supports of the apricity are completely liminal.
The man blinked at him.
Don't just stand there, Wayne said,
waving toward the walls of the warehouse.
Can't you see that the forebode malefactors are starting to bow? We could have a full-blown bannock on our hands at any minute.
What? The guard said. What am I supposed to...
Please,
Wayne said, pushing him aside. The man led him, and pulling open the door. The scene beyond was as Wax had described it. There was Telson, all right. Dark hair, rugged body. Almost like a roughs woman. He'd seen her Havana types all over the mansion. Looked older now. Being a prisoner could do that to somebody. Tweaked Leg and Thick Neck stood beside her table, and both turned with annoyance toward him. Now, Wayne thought, focusing on Tweaked Leg, the real taste.
"We've got a serious problem," Wayne said. "I've been checking the integrity of the structure. The coronals are completely nephelogenous out there. We are about to have a full-blown case of xenolagnia if somebody doesn't do something."
The bespectacled man looked at Wayne, blinked once, then said,
"Well, of course we will, you idiot. But what do we do about it?"
Wayne held back a smile, tucking it into his pocket for later use. It seemed to him that the smarter a man was, the more likely he was to pretend he knew more than he did. Like the way the drunkest fellow at the pub was always the one who was most sure he could handle another pint. Tweaked Leg would sooner sell his own grandmother as a footstool than admit he didn't know what Wayne was talking about.
"Quickly,"
Wayne said, gesturing.
"We've got to hold it up while I ratchet the Soprostomus underlays. You'll need to supervise while I work."
Tweaked Leg sighed, but walked out. Thankfully, his thick-necked companion followed. Within moments, Wayne had this guy pushing against the supports of the ship's pontoon, while Tweaked Leg observed a few guards joining in to help. A soft thump from behind indicated that Wax had dealt with the guard at the door. Normally, Wayne would feel left out, since he didn't get to do any hitting. This time, though, Wayne got to make a bunch of idiots stand with their hands pressed against some wood, thinking they were keeping the ship from tipping over. So it evened out.
"Police."
The creature spoke with a strange accent, but the voice was unmistakably human. Maracy breathed in and out in sharp breaths, regarding that hand reaching for her. A human hand. Lips that didn't move. Polished skin. That wasn't a face, but a mask. This wasn't some horrible creature, but a person in a wooden mask, the eye holes caught by the shadows. What Maracy had mistaken for fur was thick blankets clutched around the person's shoulders.
"Maracy?"
Milan asked. The conjurer appeared in the doorway.
"I got it open. What are you doing? What the hell is that?"
"It's a person," Maracy said. The masked one turned toward Milan, and the new angle lit the holes in its mask, illuminating human eyes with brown irises. Maracy stepped forward.
"Who are you?"
The person turned back to her and said something completely unintelligible. Then it paused and said,
"Elise?"
That was a man's voice.
"We've got to go," Milan said. "Safe is open." "Is the spike inside?"
Maracy asked.
"See for yourself."
Maracy hesitated, then hustled into the other room, passing Milan.
"Please!"
the man cried, huddled against the bars, reaching out. The safe gaped open in the corner of the room. The top shelf was cluttered with objects, including the little elementic grenade. Prominent among them was also a length of silvery metal. Chondra spikes, as proven in the bleeder case, were smaller than Maracy might have once imagined, less than 3 inches long and slender, not at all like the spikes in Death's Eyes. She knelt beside the safe, taking it out.
"We have it,"
Maracy said, turning to Milan.
"Do you want to carry it?"
Milan shook her head.
"We don't touch one another's spikes."
Maracy frowned, remembering the stories. "Didn't the Guardian..."
"Yes."
Milan's face remained impassive, but her tone was stern. Maracy shrugged, tucking the spike into her purse, then searched in the safe. She left the banknotes, stupid she knew, but it felt more like really robbing to take those, and took back the little cube that stored elementic charges. Beside it were several other small relics. Each was coin-like, with cloth bands attached to the sides. They, too, bore the strange inscriptions in an unknown language. Maracy picked one up, then looked over Milan's shoulder in the other room, where the man in the mask slumped against his bars. Maracy tucked the disc in her purse, then reached farther into the safe, taking out something she'd noticed earlier. A small set of keys. She stood up and strode through the room.
"Maracy?"
Milan asked, sounding skeptical.
It might have some kind of disease.
He's not an it, Marcy said, stepping up to the cage. The figure twisted to regard her. Hand quivering only a little, she unlocked the cage, getting the right key on the second try. As soon as the lock clicked, the figure lunged for the cage door, throwing it open. Outside, he stumbled. He obviously hadn't been allowed to stand up straight for some time. Marcy backed away until she was beside Milan. The tall Chondra woman watched with a skeptical expression, arms folded, as the masked figure staggered up against the boxes, holding to them. He panted, then lurched away from the boxes toward the back of the room. There was a door there that Marcy hadn't noticed in the gloom, and the man frantically shoved it open, stepping into the next room. Lights flickered on as the man found a switch within.
If he alerts the guards, I'm blaming you,
Milan said, joining Marcy as they walked after the man.
I would hate to have to tell Wax that...
Milan trailed off as they reached the next room over.
By the Lord in the first contract,
Milan whispered. The floor was stained red. Operating tables of sleek metal crowded one wall, gleaming garishly compared to the macabre floor. On the wall hung a dozen wooden masks like the one the man wore. He had fallen to his knees before them, looking up. Dried blood stained the wall where it had dripped from a few of the masks. Marcy raised her hand to her mouth, taking in the gruesome scene. There were no bodies, but the blood bespoke a massacre. The man she'd rescued lifted his mask with a trembling hand, tipping it back so it rested on the top of his head, exposing his face. A young face, much younger than she'd imagined. A youth not yet 20, she guessed, with a short, wispy beard and mustache. He stared up at those masks, unblinking, hands spread to the sides in disbelief. Marcy stepped forward, moving to lift the hem of her skirt so as not to brush that bloody ground, before remembering she had on trousers. As she reached the youth, he turned to her.
Please,
he whispered, tears in his eyes. Wax stepped into the room. Telson sat twirling a pencil in her hand. There was a speaking box before her on the table, but making no sound. She turned lazily to see who had entered, then froze in place, gaping. He closed the door quietly, aluminum gun in his other hand. He started to speak, but Telson leaped from her chair and threw herself into his arms. Head against his chest, she started weeping softly.
Rusts, he said, holding her, feeling awkward. What did they do to you, Telson?
He wasn't certain what he'd expected from their reunion, but this hadn't been it. He didn't think he'd ever seen her cry. He certainly couldn't remember it. She shook her head, pulling back, sniffling and setting her jaw. She looked old. Not that she was ancient, but he remembered her as a youth, not a middle-aged woman. Stupid though it sounded, he hadn't expected age to come for Telson. She had always seemed invincible.
No other ways out of this room? Wax asked, glancing about.
No, she said. Do you have another weapon?
He pulled out one of his Starions and handed it to her.
Do you know how to use it?
I'm a fast learner, she said, looking far more comfortable now that she had a gun in her hand.
Telson, Wax said. Is he here, our uncle?
No. I was just speaking with him through that device. He likes to check in on me. I have to tell him how wonderful I think my accommodations are. He pretends I'm his guest, even still.
Well, you're not. Not anymore. Let's go.
Hopefully, Wayne's distraction was still working. Telson, however, sat down in her chair again. She gripped that gun in both hands, held before her, but she stared unseeingly.
There's so much to ask. Why did you come back? Rusts, why did you leave Waxillium? You didn't come when I sent to you, when I was engaged to Morin, when our parents died.
There isn't time, Wax said, seizing her by the shoulder.
She looked up at him, dazed.
You were always the quiet one, a thoughtful one. How did you get here? Your face, Waxelium. You're old.
The door suddenly slammed open. The tall, thick-armed man that Wax had fought on the train stood there, looking stunned. He turned from Wax to Telson and opened his mouth. Telson shot him.
"We need to go,"
Milan said.
"We're bringing him,"
Marcy said, pointing to the man.
"Why?"
"Haven't you figured it out, Milan?" Marcy asked. "That ship out there wasn't built by the Set. It's from somewhere else, someplace distant and alien. It probably wrecked near our coast, and the Set brought it here to be studied."
Milan cocked her head.
"Harmony does say odd things sometimes, about other peoples, not from the basin."
She blinked, focusing on the man kneeling on the bloody floor.
"Wow. Wow."
Marcy nodded. Proof that there was life past the roughs and the deserts beyond. She couldn't let him stay here, particularly not with the Set.
"Bring him then,"
Milan said, moving out of the room.
"And let's get back to the meeting point."
Marcy gestured toward the way out, trying to usher the masked man along. He just knelt there on the bloody floor, looking up at those hollow masks on the wall. Then, with a trembling finger, he reached up and slid his mask back down over his face. He stood and pulled his blankets tight, shambling after Marcy as she crossed the room with the cages and entered the study. Milan was already out in the hallway beyond. Marcy fetched her rifle and moved to join the Chondra. Rusts, what was Waxelium going to say when he found out she'd picked up a stray? She could almost hear his voice.
"You freed him, Marcy, but for all he knows, you're a member of the same group who apparently killed his friends. Be careful."
She stopped at the door and looked back, gripping her rifle more tightly. Waxelium could be a curmudgeon, but he was right more often than not. The masked man might be dangerous. He had stopped inside the room with the safe, looking about, seeming dazed. How long had he been in that little cage, trapped in the darkness, listening as his friends were taken, tortured, and killed? Rust and ruin. His eyes found the safe, fixating upon it, and then he crossed the room in a shuffle. He reached inside, and for a moment she assumed he was going for the banknotes. But of course not. He pulled out one of the little discs with the straps. He held it up, seeming awed, then shucked off the blankets he'd been wearing like a cloak. She'd expected him to be wearing a loincloth or something savage underneath, but instead he was dressed in trousers that went down to just below his knees, under which he wore tight white socks. His shirt was loose and white, and over it he wore a snug red vest, matching his mask in coloring, with a double row of buttons up the front. She'd never seen clothing like it before, but it was hardly savage. The man yanked up one sleeve, exposing his arm, and strapped on the disc by its cloth ties. He let out a relieved sigh. Looking toward her again, he seemed more confident now. He was a short man, even a few inches shorter than Wayne, but seemed to have grown a foot by standing up straight and discarding those thick blankets. But Rusts, how were they going to sneak him out? He was hardly inconspicuous with that mask. Perhaps Marcy and Milan could openly move short distances in here without drawing attention, but this man certainly couldn't. A series of gunshots rang out in the warehouse. Perhaps sneaking wouldn't be an issue. 20. The corpse slumped into the room, one hand still on the doorknob, face frozen in an expression of shock. Telson had fired four times, and it only hit twice, but that was enough. Wax cursed, grabbing his sister by the arm and towing her across the room. With his other hand, he found a vial of metal flakes on his belt.
"I'll kill them all, Waxelium," she whispered, "each and every one of them. They held me."
Great. On one hand, he couldn't blame her. On the other hand, this was going to be rusting inconvenient. He downed the metal vial, then peeked out of the doorway to see the engineers and carpenters scattering for cover as guards came running toward Wax's position. A few were very near, the ones Wayne had led away, and one pointed at him and shouted.
The room's flimsy walls seemed like they'd be about as effective against bullets as stern words were against the town drunk. As the first soldier took a shot at him, Wax shoved back with a steel push, he made a decision.
"Hang on to me," he said, pulling Telson to his side.
He took one step out of the room, fired into the ground, and sent them on a push up into the air. Soldiers pointed, leveling guns, but in a moment he was on the top of the large ship. As he'd seen earlier, it was wide and flat up here, though the planks were smoother than the deck of any ship he'd seen, and the gunwales were like the crenellated tops of a fort or old tower. He dropped Telson.
"I'll be back soon," he promised, leaping over the side of the ship.
The man who had shot at him earlier wasn't giving up and fired more rounds. Splinters popped off the sides of the ship as Wax fired Vindication and dropped the man. Wax landed, bounced off a stray nail, then skidded to a stop beside a stack of boxes where Wayne was hiding.
"What?" Wayne asked. "Get impatient."
"My sister shot one of them."
"Nice."
Wax shook his head. Soldiers had started to pour into both ends of the large structure.
"Not nice. There will be kill squads mixed among those soldiers, Wayne. Aluminum bullets. We need to get Maracy and Milan and go, fast."
Wayne nodded. Wax took another draft of steel flakes in case he lost his gun belt, then nodded.
"Speed us to the other side."
Wayne ran out, and Wax followed. Gunfire sounded, but Wayne popped up a speed bubble. It only covered about 10 feet, but that was plenty to throw off aim. Wayne let Wax pass him, then they charged through the edge, side by side. The bubble collapsed, and bullets zipped through the air back where they'd been. They ran on, but about the time the soldiers got another bead on them, Wayne created another bubble. This lurched them forward again, and shortly they were able to dive behind the broken section of the ship's pontoon and take cover. Soldiers cried out, confused by the allomancy, but if there were kill squads among them, trained haze-killer hitmen, they wouldn't be so easily fooled. Wax led the way, darting along the front of the ship in its shadow. As soon as someone started firing, Wayne tossed up another bubble, and the two of them repositioned. Wayne made to run out, but Wax stopped him, arm on shoulder.
"Wait."
Safely inside this speed bubble, Wax looked back across the cavernous hall. They were close to the eastern side, and soldiers in slow motion set up a perimeter, clogging the doorway and kneeling in ranks. Captains at the rear yelled, pointing, and bullets flew toward the last spot where Wayne and Wax had been seen. Uncomfortably, more shots streaked through the air where, if they'd been following their previous pattern, they would have exited the speed bubble.
"Damn," Wayne said, eyeing the bullets.
He tossed over his canteen. Wax took a drink, judging distances and feeling the surreal sensation of standing calmly in a maelstrom of gunfire, sipping apple juice.
"They're going all out," Wayne said.
"Our reputation precedes us. How much time have you got left?"
2 minutes, maybe. I've got more bend alloy on the horse in case. The Condra stocked me up before we left."
Wax grunted. 2 minutes could go very quickly. He pointed at the large hole in the ship's side where a plank ramp led to the thing's insides.
"I saw the ladies go in there."
"Funny," Wayne said, "'cause I see them peeking out over there."
Wax followed his gesture, and indeed saw Milan's face behind a barely opened door out of one of the rooms at the side of the warehouse. Wax took a deep breath.
"All right. Those armies will cut us apart, allomancy or no, if we don't hide quickly. Those rooms will do. We can move through them toward the outer wall of the building. I can break through it, and we can flee into the night that direction."
"Right," Wayne said. "And your sister?"
"She should be safe for the moment," Wax said. "Once we break out, I'll launch myself to the roof, then come back down through the open part and grab her."
"Sounds good," Wayne said. "Except for one thing."
Wax handed back the canteen.
"Here."
"Ha,"
Wayne said, taking it.
"But I was talking about that."
He pointed toward the ship. A figure was climbing down one of the rope ladders that hung over the side of the ship. Telson had not stayed put.
"Rust and ruin," Wax snapped.
"Under a minute left, mate."
"Get her inside a bubble," Wax shouted, gesturing. "I'll join the other two. Go."
They split, the speed bubble falling.
A sudden storm of gunfire assaulted Wax's ears as he dropped to the ground, feet forward, and pushed against the metal supports in the ship behind him. He skidded across the packed dirt of the floor, bullets flying overhead, and reached the door that Milan flung open for him. His heels hit the threshold, the corridor had a wooden floor, and he popped up onto his feet, landing inside with a dusty thump.
"I'll have you know," Maracy said, "that we managed to do our job without alerting anyone."
"I'll send you a plaque," Wax said, pointing toward a strange short man standing behind her.
"What the hell is that?"
The man pointed back.
"His people must have built the ship," Maracy said. "They had him caged in there, Waxillium."
"Damn," Milan said from the doorway. "That army isn't playing games."
It was hard to hear her over the gunfire.
"I found my sister," Wax said. "Suit's people must know how angry that will make him. We need to..."
"Wax,"
Milan said, pointing. He squeezed back up beside her. Wayne had almost reached his sister, who pressed herself against the ship's side, eyes frantic. But Wayne had been hit. He lurched in place, holding his shoulder as another bullet hit him right in the neck. He fell in a spray of blood. Wayne could heal from that with his new strange metal mind. Unfortunately, the soldiers didn't stop firing. Another bullet hit Wayne's side as he dropped and played dead, then another. In an eye blink, he was healed and up, but then another round dropped him. They were prepared. They knew. "You want to kill a bloodmaker? Knock him down and keep shooting." Seeing his friend bleeding, facing some 50 men on his own, awakened something primal in Wax. He didn't think. He didn't shout orders. He tore from the hallway in a furious push on the nails in the walls, soaring out into the warehouse proper, a foot or so above the ground, pulling up dust in his wake. The soldiers had been waiting for this. They had formed up on both sides of the warehouse, using boxes as cover, and they sent out twin waves of bullets, completely uncaring that they risked catching one another in the crossfire. Killing an Allomancer was worth the danger. They could only wish to be so lucky. To Wax's eyes, the room became a frantic network of blue lines, a loom full of a mad weaver's threads. He shouted, pushing to both sides, shoving sprays of bullets in either direction and creating a ballooning hub of open space. Several bullets continued to fly, though he noticed them only because one clipped him on the shoulder. Wax spun and yanked Vindication from her holster. A second volley came and, his mind instantly matching blue lines with bullets fired, he shot once, dropping one of the men among the ranks who had fired an aluminum bullet. More bullets came in a storm, but Wax swept them aside like dishes off a table. He was at the mercy of anyone firing aluminum, so he kept moving, dashing across the floor and leaping, pushing behind himself and severely reducing his weight once he'd finished pushing. The result was immediate. He sped up like an arrow, flying through the air with a roar of wind in his ears. He landed before Wayne in a skid and pushed bullets away from the healing man with a roar, then increased his weight and pushed on the hull of the ship nearby. The wood crumpled, nails popping free of joints and planks tearing away before his fury, creating a second hole.
"Inside!"
he shouted at his sister, prone on the ground nearby. She nodded, scurrying in, and Wayne, still bleeding from a dozen different places, joined her in a crawl, throwing himself in through the opening.
"Can't let them stay here," Wax thought,
pushing himself away as another round of bullets pelted the area. One didn't deflect when he pushed it, but he couldn't pick out the owner from among the dozens of firing men. Damn. The ship was a death trap. Yes, it would provide cover, but if they took refuge there, the troops would surround them. But Wayne needed a moment to heal. That meant keeping the soldiers. Three men in jet-black suits launched in succession over the hunkered-down soldiers. The guns they bore had no allomantic metal trails. Wax cursed, dropping Vindication and ripping the shotgun from its holster on his leg. The first of the Allomancers to land pushed on Wax. He felt it as a jolt on the shotgun as he leveled the thing, increasing his weight and setting it against his shoulder to fire. The Allomancer smiled, pushing on the slug as it left the barrel. But the huge powder load of the gun, designed to bring down thugs, sent the man sprawling backward from his own push. Dazed, he was just able to glance up as the next slug hit him in the face.
"Thanks, Ronette."
The other two Allomancers ducked down as they landed, expecting more fire, but the powerful shotgun held only two rounds. Wax dropped it into its holster as he knelt, grabbing Vindication.
Behind.
If there was a kill squad from one direction, they'd likely send another for him the other way, too. The regular soldiers were mostly a distraction. He twisted, pushing around himself and leveling vindication to surprise a man and woman in suits sneaking up on him. He dropped the woman. The male Allomancer opened fire. Too many shots. No metal lines. Wax. The bullets froze in the air. Wax blinked and then noticed something that had fallen to the ground near the enemy Allomancer. A small metal cube. Marcy crouched inside the doorway where she'd been hiding, Milan standing over her and drawing fire, absorbing bullets with her flesh like it was no big deal. Wax grinned, then stepped aside. The Allomantic grenade ran out a second later, and the man who had been trapped inside the bubble fired again, trying to kill a Wax who was no longer there. Wax leveled his own gun and killed the fellow. Marcy wished she knew where her earplugs had gotten to. Honestly, how did Waxillium survive without them? The man had to be half-deaf by now. A bullet popped up dust on the ground near her. Milan knelt beside Marcy, giving her cover from one direction and taking another series of hits. She grunted.
"This doesn't hurt," she said, "but it's not particularly pleasant, either."
Ahead, Waxillium dodged shots from two more members of the kill squad and scooped up the device. Marcy leveled her rifle, trying to concentrate. Everyone was moving so quickly. And the bullets. They zipped in the air all around her. She brought down several soldiers, trying to focus on the ones that were firing in her direction. Many had taken shelter behind boxes on either side, so they weren't firing in coordinated volleys anymore. They seemed to know that their job was to make a lot of noise and try to distract Wax, while others, better equipped and better trained, actually tried to take him down. Still, it was remarkable he didn't get hit. Waxillium dashed past, mist coat tassels flying, and swept bullets from the air. Then he launched himself toward the catwalks above. Two men in suits followed. Allomancers. Marcy took aim at one and fired, but her shot was deflected. Speaking of which, though gunfire still popped in the huge room, no bullets hit the ground near Marcy, and none seemed to be striking Milan. But why? Then Marcy spotted the little cube nearby. Waxillium had charged and then dropped it in front of them as he ran by. Marcy grinned, fishing an aluminum round from her purse. She could feel the device pushing on her gun, but it was far enough away that it didn't matter. A hand fell on her shoulder. She jumped, then found the small masked man behind her. Rusts, she'd almost forgotten about him. His other hand was frozen halfway toward his mask, and behind it his eyes were wide. She followed his gaze, which was focused on Waxillium, who landed beyond them. He must have increased his weight many-fold, for he was able to push a group of boxes by their nails and send them flying backward, along with many soldiers.
"Potenstahl," he whispered in awe.
"Allomancer," Marcy said with a nod.
"Hanekonga?"
"I have no idea what that means," Marcy said. "But that cube thing will soon stop buzzing, so we need to move. Milan, do we retreat back?"
"Please,"
the masked man said, gesturing toward the ship. He pointed frantically.
"Please."
Marcy ignored him, scrambling across the ground, entering the warehouse proper, and grabbing the device. It had indeed stopped buzzing. Waxillium landed nearby, sweeping a round of shots away from her, and Marcy charged the thing in her hand. It seemed like last time. Yes, by burning just a tad of her cadmium, she was able to get it buzzing, yet not slow herself down too much. She somehow poured the power into the device and tossed it at the people who landed nearby, chasing Waxillium. It froze them in place.
"Nice work so far," Waxillium said. "But we're going to have to split up. Get back into those hallways. I'll follow soon. You're too exposed out here."
The men lurched out of her speed bubble. Waxillium started firing at them, but they ducked, and one grabbed the little cube. Marcy brought him down with the aluminum bullet she'd chambered. Waxillium grinned.
"Go!"
he said, charging the other man, who yelped and leaped into the air, pushing himself away. Waxillium scooped up the little cube as he passed, then he too launched into the air.
"Come on,"
Milan said, grabbing Marcy by the shoulder. A bullet took the Chondra in the face, ripping off a chunk of her cheek and exposing green crystalline bone underneath. The masked man cried out in fear, pointing and mumbling in his language.
"You should see me in the mornings," Milan said.
She gestured back toward the hallways. Marcy moved to follow. The masked man pulled on her arm, pointing more frantically at the ship.
"Please, please, please!"
Maracy hesitated. A bad idea in the middle of a firefight. Fortunately, most everyone seemed to be concentrating on Waxillium. Something hit her in the left side. She looked down to see what it was and was surprised to see red blooming on her coat around a hole. A bullet hole.
"I've been shot,"
she said, more surprised than pained. Shouldn't that hurt? She'd been shot. She stared at the blood, her blood, until the masked man grabbed her by the shoulders and started towing her toward the ship. Milan cursed and helped him. Maracy realized she'd dropped her gun and struggled against them, trying to reach for it, suddenly frantic that she not leave it behind. That made almost no sense, and part of her acknowledged it, but Rust's. Shock, she thought. I'm going into shock. Oh, hell. Wax soared high above the floor of the warehouse, zipping past the catwalks where several gunmen with rifles had set up. He flipped Renette's ball device outward, catching it around the railing of the catwalk, and hung on tight, pivoting sharply in the air. The gunman started, trying to draw a bead on him as he landed behind them. He stepped back and pushed one gunman out just at the right moment, shoving him into the air as the last of the kill squad allomancers shot up past the catwalks, bearing a stunned expression at Wax's sudden change of direction. He collided with the rifleman in midair, and Wax turned, pushing the other rifleman away. The poor fellow screamed as he fell. Farther down the catwalk, two more men had set up with crossbows and wooden shields. Lovely. Wax increased his weight. The entire catwalk shattered as he crashed downward through the wood, destroying the supports. He pushed himself off a falling bar, shooting back out into the air, spinning Renette's ball device on its cord. Above him, the suited man shook off the frantic gunman, dropping him and pushing off to send himself into the air. Wax flipped Renette's ball upward and let go of the cord, still falling backward. The confused allomancer caught the device by the cord as it passed. Wax shot him in the chest. Shouldn't drop your allomantic shield, Wax thought, twisting in the air as he fell. Even to catch a neat toy. As he approached the ground, Wax slowed himself on a spent bullet, then landed with a flare of mist coat tassels. The dead allomancer thumped to the ground beside him. The ball dropped from his fingers and rolled toward Wax. Thanks, Wax said, scooping it up. Where was Maracy? Down and bleeding, being dragged into the ship. Damn, Wax growled, launching himself into the air again as more soldiers fired. This place was a mess. Too many soldiers, many of whom were advancing on the ship, hiding a group of men with modern crossbows behind them. As one got close to the ship, Wayne peeked out. Wayne! Wax shouted, passing overhead. He pocketed Renette's ball and pulled out the allomantic grenade, which was buzzing furiously, and dropped it. Wayne looked up just in time to snag the thing from the air, then looked down at it with surprise. When the first bullet curved away from him, Wayne grinned instead, then let out a whoop and flung it at the men in front of him. The thing rolled among them, tossing weapons aside with its power. Wax sighed, landing on the top of the ship. Of course he'd throw it. Wayne followed by jumping among the approaching soldiers, energetically laying about him with his dueling canes. A bullet came startlingly close to Wax. More aluminum? As Wayne enthusiastically busted heads, Wax launched off the ship and landed among the advancing soldiers, increasing his weight, and pushed outward with a flare of strength. That tossed people away from him in a blast. When the bodies fell, three men stood, stupefied, holding guns Wax couldn't sense. He brought them down with a Starion. His other guns were out of bullets, then turned as he heard something distant. Horns blaring. A command. He leaped to the side, enough men dead or dropped that he could get a clear view out one of the doors into the night. Men were streaming out of the buildings in the village. Dozens. He had a sinking feeling of dread. How long until his medals gave out? How many could he fight until someone with a crossbow or an aluminum bullet got lucky and hit him? He roared, launching himself upward in a leap over the fallen men he'd pushed. Many were climbing to their feet. He was one man, not an army. He needed to run. Back! He shouted at Wayne, who already had a crossbow bolt sticking from his thigh. The shorter man joined him, running toward cover inside the wrecked ship. Maracy squeezed her eyes shut against the pain. It had finally come, arriving with a vengeance. Milan had given her a painkiller to chew, but it hadn't done anything yet.
Deaton,
the masked man said, putting her hand on her wound, which he'd bound with a strip of cloth from his shirt. She cracked an eye and saw him nod encouragingly, though with the mask down over his face she could only see his eyes. Well, she wasn't dead, even if rusts it hurt. And she thought she remembered reading somewhere that getting shot in the stomach, even on the side, wasn't good.
Don't think about that.
What was going on? She gritted her teeth, shoved down her panic at being wounded, and tried to assess their situation. Milan watched the battlefield from beside the hole in the ship. Waxillium's sister stood nearby, cradling a handgun, eyes intense. Outside, gunfire, grunts, and screams accompanied Waxillium and Wayne doing what they did best, creating havoc. Apparently the havoc quota had been filled, for a few moments later Waxillium swooped in through the hole. He nodded to Milan, his face shining with sweat, breathing heavily. Wayne scrambled in a moment later. He had a crossbow bolt sticking from his leg.
"Well, that was fun,"
Wayne said, plopping down and taking a deep breath.
"Ain't been whooped so bad since the last time I played cards with Renette."
"Mercy,"
Waxillium said, walking over to her. He pushed the masked man aside.
"Thank Harmony you're alive. How bad is it?"
"I don't really have much to compare it to,"
she said through clenched teeth. Waxillium knelt beside her, lifting the bandage and grunting.
"You'll live, unless that nicked the intestines. That could be bad."
"What kind of bad?"
"Painful bad." "I might be able to do something," Milan said. "I'll check it out once we're safe. Speaking of which, how exactly are we going to get away?"
Waxillium didn't respond immediately. He looked exhausted. He glanced up at his sister, who was still muttering and holding her pistol. Outside the ship, it had gone unnervingly quiet.
"Our best bet is still going out through one of the warehouse's walls," Waxillium said. "We're going to have to push toward those rooms Maracy and Milan were in."
"That's going to be dangerous, Wax,"
Wayne said, stumbling to his feet, still ignoring the bolt in his thigh.
"They'll have formed up, knowing we're going to try to make a break for it."
"We can manage," Waxillium said. "With me pushing, we get to those rooms, find an outer wall, then break through."
"And if they're waiting on the other side?"
Milan asked.
"Hopefully there won't be. It—"
"Guys," Wayne said, "I don't think we have time to plan."
Gunfire sounded outside again, and bullets started snapping against the hull. Wayne scrambled away from the opening. Maracy thought she could hear Eirich out there shouting for the soldiers not to damage the ship, but the firing continued. It seemed someone had overruled him.
"Belize,"
the masked man said, taking Maracy by the arm and pointing. Maracy managed to get to her feet, though the pain made her eyes water. The masked man gestured, holding her by the arm. She followed, easier than trying to complain.
"We're going to have to push through it," Waxillium said from behind.
"I want to kill them," Waxillium's sister said. "I need more bullets."
"Yeah, let's have you focus on running, Telson. Everyone get ready on my mark. Wayne, did you happen to grab that grenade?"
"Yep."
"We'll use it to make a speed bubble at the halfway point," Waxillium said.
"No luck there," Wayne said. "Completely out of bend alloy."
"Damn," Waxillium said. "Then we—"
He trailed off.
"Maracy? Where are you going?"
She continued limping along with the masked man.
"He wants to show us something," Maracy said.
"They're coming,"
Wayne shouted, peeking around the corner.
"Fast!"
Maracy focused on moving down the corridor, one hand holding to her wound. She heard Waxillium curse, then gunfire sounded in the hallway. Waxillium was firing on men trying to pile in through the hole after them.
"Trapped in here,"
Maracy thought. The masked man let go of her suddenly, then scrambled up the hallway ahead.
"Don't,"
Maracy said, but he stopped, threw open a panel in the wall, then reached in and pulled something. A section of the ceiling, painted with one of the strange golden patterns, fell open. A rope ladder dropped down, hanging only halfway to the floor. The masked man jumped up and grabbed it.
"There's a hidden room here," Maracy called.
"Better than nothing," Waxillium called back.
Everyone up!
Wayne went next, jumping up and catching the ladder and climbing it with a lithe step. Milan could touch it without needing to jump, and she hoisted herself next. Waxillium's sister barely managed to grab the thing, but she climbed up with a hand from Milan. Marisie stood looking with despair at the ladder, trying to imagine climbing it with her pain, until Waxillium seized her around the waist and pushed them both up in a spinning leap. They landed inside the trap door, finding themselves in a narrow, low-ceilinged room, fitted with a few chairs that were bolted to the floor. A single small window to the left looked out of the hall, letting in a sliver of light. The place looked like a railway compartment.
Great, Wayne said. At least now we can die in relaxed positions.
The masked man was fiddling with something near the wall. Some kind of trunk? He got it open and pulled out another one of those small coin-like medallions with the straps on the sides. He pulled off the one he was wearing and immediately gave a visible shiver, then slapped this one on instead.
How is that?
He asked, looking back at them. Marisie blinked in shock. He'd said it in her language. Strangely accented, true, but intelligible.
No, the man asked. You're looking at me confused still. These things never work right. She swore that...
No, it works, Marisie said. At least, I can understand you.
She looked to the others, who nodded.
Aha, the man said. Great, great. Put these on.
He tossed a medallion at each of them.
Touching the skin, please, maskless barbarians, except you, metallic one. You will not need one, yeah?
Marisie took hers and settled down on one of the seats, feeling dizzy. The painkiller seemed to finally be doing something, but she was still exhausted. Below, shouts sounded in the hallway.
Somebody better shut that door,
the masked man said, crawling down on the floor and fiddling with something underneath the counter. Wayne obliged, pulling up the ladder, which was tied to the trap door. It clicked closed, leaving them in even greater gloom. A gunshot sounded below, then another. Marisie jumped as the bullets hammered against the floor of the room.
Does this place have any other exits? Waxillium asked.
The masked man yanked on something, and the room shook with a jolt.
Nope, he said. Then why did you lead us here?
Waxillium demanded, grabbing him by the arm. The masked man looked back at him.
Medallions on, yeah?
More bullets pelted the floor, but didn't penetrate into the room, fortunately.
What do they do?
Milan asked.
Make you lighter,
the masked man said. As soon as he said it, as soon as she knew what it did, something inside of Marisie understood. She was holding metal that, somehow, she could feel. It wanted something from her, and she poured it in, filling the metal. The metal mind. She grew lighter, rising on her seat, the force of her body pushing less on her backside. Telson gasped, obviously experiencing a similar sensation.
Now that, Wayne said, that's right strange.
Great metallic one,
the masked man said, glancing at Waxillium.
I, of course, wouldn't dare give orders to one of your stature, even if you wear your bare face out at all times. Who am I to judge? Even if you look equally crass as these others, even the cute one, I'm sure you're not. But, if I may be so bold to suggest...
What?
Waxillium asked.
A little push, the masked man said, pointing downward. On my mark?
If I push downward, Waxillium said, I'll just fly up and hit the ceiling.
He hesitated as the masked man pointed to a pair of straps connected to the floor, with wooden handholds at the ends. Waxillium looked at them, then looked at the masked man, who nodded eagerly. Even in the darkness, Marisie could see the curiosity on Waxillium's face. Despite the men shouting below, the muffled sound of gunshots, he was still the lawman, the detective. Questions teased him. He stepped over to the straps, picked them up, and held them firmly, bracing himself with his feet on the floor.
Ready, he said.
A moment,
the masked man said, reaching for a lever. He yanked it hard and the entire room shook, then slid sideways. Out of the hall, like a drawer in a dresser being opened. Marisie could see out of the front end now, which proved to have a large glass window that had been blocked by wood earlier.
Go,
the man said. Waxillium must have pushed, for the room shook, then rose into the air. They weren't in a room at all, but in a small boat that could detach from the main vessel. Lower right quadrant of the new ascendancy broadsheet. The ghastly gondola continued. When last we'd met, he'd worn a mist cloak, the hood of which had obscured his face. But now I could see him clearly. Lightning flashed in his cold eyes, and wind disarranged his sand-colored hair. In one hand he held the rolled tapestry like a baton. With the other he pointed an alien-looking pistol at me. No doubt the origin of the ghost he'd launched earlier. The runes on the pistol's side flared emerald. I burnt chromium and lunged forward into a Bazcor move meant to stop coin shots before they fill you full of holes. Just as the green runes turned red, my hand touched the metal of the device. When I drain a misting of metal reserves, I feel something I can only describe as pulling power from the metal and returning this power to some external source. The metal remains, but the power is gone. I imagined that same intent as I touched the pistol. I pulled power from the device and returned it elsewhere. The red glowing runes went out like candles in the wind. It worked. The haunted device was certainly something of another world, neither ferrochemical nor allomantic, yet my chromium touch had affected it. The haunting man glanced at the pistol and gritted his teeth.
"What in Hellmore did you do?"
He touched a few of the runes on the side of his pistol-like device, and the symbols began to glow again. He pointed the gun at me, this time mere inches from my face. My chromium trick had not broken the pistol as I'd hoped. If I couldn't permanently leech its power, I'd have to relieve the haunted man of it altogether. My Bazcor training took over, and I executed a movement meant to knock a gun from an aggressor's hands. One smooth maneuver took me behind my opponent and out of range of the pistol. Now the haunted man stood between me and the gondola's rusted opening. My next move sent the alien pistol flying from the man's grip and out into open air. The haunted man spun to meet me, surprise registering in his eyes. I took the instant to seize the map. Unfortunately, I was only able to grab one end, and it unrolled between me and the haunted man. Each of us held tight to the long ends of the map. I only needed to find the pouch on it with my father's instructions sewn inside. After that, it did not matter to me whether this thief took the rest of the tapestry or not.
"Shadows, woman,"
said the man.
"Leave me alone."
He clutched his end of the map and jumped from the hole in the side of the car. The sudden jolt on the tapestry pulled me to the ground and dragged me across the floor till my head and arms dangled out over the void, though I still managed to hang on with both hands to my edge of the map, the only thing keeping the haunted man from falling to his doom.
"Bloody Hellmore," he yelled. "Would you just let go?"
"I will not." I gripped the fabric tighter.
"It's just a stupid map."
He studied the tapestry. Adjusting his grip a few inches to the side, he crumpled the linen between his fingers and began to climb. "It's my inheritance," I yelled back.
"I don't care if it's the survivor's bathrobe. Just give it to me."
"You are entirely disagreeable," I said.
"Then you're starting to figure me out."
I trust you will not judge me too harshly if the pleasant timbre of the comic stranger's voice had me completely enchanted. His hair, like gold, his eyes, like blue ice. If you ever meet me in person, I will gladly give you a more detailed description. "Truthfully," I said, "a little politeness on your part could have avoided this whole debacle, and you wouldn't be hanging 50 feet above death from the threads of a poorly rendered map. Climb in. Let's come to an agreement." He reached up as if to take my offer, but something in his hand flashed in the light of the stars. Instinctively, I burnt metal, releasing one hand to touch the device. It was an everyday hunting knife.
"Politeness," he said with a grumble. "That's not how I work."
He clutched his side of the tapestry and cut through the top of it with his knife. Between us, a V-shape formed just before the map ripped completely in half. I gasped as he fell backward into the mist, clutching his piece of the tapestry.
I pulled away from the edge, frantically searched my half of the map for the hidden pocket, and found it almost immediately. The lack of a knife, however, meant I would have to wait to open it until I returned to the mansion. Still, I was relieved that although the haunted man was gone and my father's map ruined, I had the information I needed to continue my quest. I do admit, though, that if the haunted man still lives, he wound up with the better half of the map. After disembarking the lift, I walked to the location where my foe would have hit the ground. I found no trace of him, and though no one witnessed his fall, a young white-haired man was there and offered to tell me a story. I declined. It was not until I had returned home that I lit up the electric lamp and found Pinecone Allamouser III asleep with her kittens on my bed. Careful not to disturb them, I used a sewing knife to make quick work of the tapestry's hidden pocket. Inside was a folded piece of vellum written on in my father's flowing penmanship. My dearest Nicelle, in this letter I am at long last able to disclose to you the secrets of the unknown constructs of antiquity. Continued next week.